afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. For many, many years, I think at least since America has called for a national conversation on race, various leaders over the years. I'm trying to remember when I first heard that phrase, a national conversation on race. I think the first time I heard it put in those words goes back to Bill Clinton. I'm sure similar phrases were used earlier. But that's the first time I remember hearing the phrase, America has to have a national conversation about race. And, of course, oftentimes nothing really happens. People do have conversations, but nothing which is promises to be decisive in any way. Recently, though, the killing of George Floyd dominated headlines, dominated social media, and Americans were talking more about race than I heard them speak in a long, long time. And this is also true. The New York Times published a piece called How the American Catholic Church is Wrestling with Black Lives Matter, with the Black Lives Matter movement. And we've tried to talk as straightforwardly, candidly, and wisely about race on this program as we can muster. I've asked my friend Deacon Harold Brooks Sivers to join us. He's a much sought-after Catholic speaker. We know him as the Dynamic Deacon. He has much media experience. He co-hosts EWTN's Morning Glory program and also Modern Day Radio's Living Stones. He's appeared on EWTN many times and in the feature film Power in My Hands. He's the author of several books, including one that I've used in some teaching I've done called Behold the Man, A Catholic Vision of Male Spirituality. And he's published articles. In fact, recently he was just interviewed for a Catholic World Report piece called A Catholic Response to Racism. Deacon Harold is from Portland, Oregon, so he's got some insight into what's happening in that troubled city right now. He lives there with his wife, Colleen. And he's a black Catholic, former law enforcement officer, deacon, father of four. He's a busy guy. So I'm glad he was able to join us today. Deacon, thanks. It's good to have you here again.
It's great to be on with you, Al, as always. Honored to be with you.
Well, let's talk about, again, we've talked about race in the past. Things have heated up over the last few months with the death of George Floyd. As a black man, when you hear people say we need to have a national conversation on race, what goes through your mind?
Well, here's the thing. National conversations are nice, but the reason why we're seeing so much disunity and so much divisiveness, because we don't have any leadership on this issue.
Right.
That's a fact. I mean, back in the 50s and 60s, there was Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa, there was Nelson Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in India, there was Gandhi. I mean, so there were people that they could rally around and say, yes, here is someone that cuts through all the polarization. Here's someone that cuts through all the rhetoric. And here's someone we can rally behind. Here's someone we can stand behind. Here's someone we can support. We don't have anybody like that today. I'm not saying there should be another Martin Luther King. I mean, he's obviously one in a million.
Sure.
But there's no one that has that same kind of charisma that we can come to now in this time, in this place, in our country's history, and say, yes, here's someone we can rally around that cuts through all the politicization, because that's what's happening now. People are pointing fingers
right.
And politicizing this issue. It's becoming about sexual identity. It's becoming everything except solving the problem.
Right.
So a national conversation is nice, but I think we have to get more grassroots with this thing if we're going to really come up with long-term solutions. We cannot look, we're in a society right now that's so turned in on itself, we cannot depend on someone else to lead this. We, especially as Catholics, I think at the parish level, take this grassroots and really be able to have some serious discussions and then move out from there, because that's part of our call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take the faith and then we spread it and we share it. You know, and I think that's going to be, for us, the real solution to this thing.
Yeah, it seems to me the church is especially called to do this, because at the heart of our identity is the idea that we are a international, global, Catholic institution, a body that Jesus intended. male, female, bond and free. And so the church in the past has been known, even though it falls short at times, it has been known as the place where, in fact, everybody is, quote, welcome. In principle, everybody is welcome. What has kept the Catholic Church in America from being recognized as the venue in which the race issue can be addressed and resolved?
Great question, Al. I think, honestly, that we're a little gun-shy right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the Catholic Church has received a number of black eyes over the last 10 years here. You know, with the sex abuse scandal and at all levels of the church. We still haven't got the report about McCarrick yet. We're waiting over a year for that. Mm-hmm. Still nothing on that. In the past couple of months, we see financial, and so the sex abuse aside, financial scandals in dioceses, even involving bishops.
Mm-hmm.
A priest was just arrested this past week for sex trafficking, and other priests have been arrested for having child pornography on their computer. So the church is a little bit gun shy because who are we to talk about and lead in this issue when we have all these other things that are on us?
Yeah.
But this is a perfect opportunity for the church on this issue to step up and speak as whatever that word is, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
With regard to like the way they talk about immigrants and migrants and the environment, we can talk about race with that same kind of passion and enthusiasm, and we're not. That's why I think we need to do this at a lower level, at the parish level, I think.
Oftentimes, I think white people, and I'm a white person, is uncomfortable because they know that in the past there have been tripwires and they've fallen into, you know, matters of self-referencing, and they don't know what the proper etiquette is. What are some of the things to watch out for when white people are talking about the issue of race?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, if we're uncomfortable talking about important things, then look at the cross. Jesus was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes we have to get uncomfortable if we're going to take our faith and our lives to that next level. We got to get uncomfortable. We got to roll up our sleeves and talk about things that sometimes we don't want to talk about. We have to face them, just like Jesus faced the cross. And so things, for example, making assumptions and stereotypes. Like I think I mentioned before, earlier this year when someone met me and they found I went to Notre Dame for my undergraduate degree.
Yes.
They said, "Oh, you went to Notre Dame. What position did you play?" Now they just assumed that I play football. And I'm like, well, you know, the question you should have asked was, "What did you study?"
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or, "Oh, Deacon, I heard you speak. You're so articulate." Well, of course. I went to Notre Dame undergrad. I went to the University of Dallas for grad school. I have 5 books. Of course I'm articulate. I mean, see, things like that just, like, drive us insane.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You know, those kind. Just treat us like everybody. Forget the, you know, just ask the questions that you guys ask anybody. Forget the race. Forget the color. We need to start seeing people and stop seeing stereotypes. Don't look at me as a black man. Look at me as a man.
Right.
Look at me as a Catholic. You know, and I'm going to say something, Al. You know, when I stand before God, he's not going to ask me how black I am.
Right.
He's going to ask me, what kind of Catholic were you? Did you stand up for the truth and beauty of the faith? I gave you the gift of fatherhood. What kind of father were you? What kind of husband were you? I gave you the gift of the diaconate. Were you not afraid to preach the truth in love, even when it meant that you would be ridiculed and mocked in my name? That's what I'm going to be held accountable for. And so that doesn't mean I put my blackness, because I love being black. I love my cultural heritage, my West Indian heritage. And I don't put that to the side at all. But when I'm dealing with someone standing in front of me, I want to see that person the way God sees them. I want to look at them through God's eyes.
Yeah. Do you see people who are using the race issue to push certain other personal political agendas?
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people are, and like I said, I don't like politics at all. I loathe the whole political stuff. But people are blaming people in political parties for what's going on or problems that are happening, how things are being handled. There's organizations, for example, Black Lives Matters organization. The national organization, not so much the social movement, but the national organization,
right.
that is pushing an agenda that really has nothing to do with Black Lives Matters at all. So, yes, there are people that are using this issue. Let's listen to what's going on here in Portland. So everyone knows about all the rioting that's been going on for months here in Portland. What's happening is this. There are peaceful protests that are going on. In fact, my wife and my kids have been to some of those peaceful protests.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Because they're really talking about what the issues are. But then what happens when those end, then the anarchists come in, and they are the ones who are looting and rioting and firebombing police and destroying buildings and attacking people, pulling them out of their cars and beating them for no reason.
Yeah,
what does that have to do with Black Lives Matter? What does that have to do with the movement? Nothing.
Right.
But yet that's the mantra that they're singing, that they're proclaiming. So yes, there are people that are using this to push other agendas that have nothing to do with the issue.
Yeah. Why don't you describe instances in which you think you were ill-treated over the course of your life because you were, quote, black?
Well, there was one incident where before I joined the monastery, I was a Benedictine in my 20s. And before I joined the monastery, I was kind of making my rounds saying, you know, goodbye to some friends. And I was coming back from a friend's house about midnight, and I was driving home, and I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do anything like that. I was just taking my time going home. I didn't live too far away. Got pulled over, and I said, okay. I was wondering, maybe a brake light was out because I wasn't speeding
right.
or anything.
Yeah.
Officer comes to the window, tells me to turn the car off and to get out. So, yeah, put the car in park, got out, put your hands on top of the car. Put my hands on top of the car, didn't make it a fuss or anything. He's shining his flashlight. Now, back at that time, I wore my Notre Dame class ring. And he shines the light on my hand, and he sees the ring. He goes, what school is that? I said, Notre Dame. He said, oh, Notre Dame, you know Tim Brown? The Heisman Trophy. Yeah, I know Tim Brown. He won the Heisman Trophy that year. And then he started talking about the Raiders and how the Raiders are going to win the Super Bowl because they got Tim Brown. And the whole thing shifted. and then a couple of minutes later, he goes, okay, you have a nice night. And I got in my car. I'm like,
what was
wow.
that about?
You know? So at first, my initial reaction was, wow, that went well. But then I got angry. I said, okay, what if I didn't go to Notre Dame? What if I was just a kid from that neighborhood, minding their own business, driving home, not drinking, not doing anything wrong, and I still to this day don't know why I was stopped.
I was just going to ask you. He never told you why you
never
were stopped.
Never told me why I was stopped. Things like that, you know.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned an incident in Chicago. I was speaking at a Holy Fire, which is like a NCYC for middle school kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I was dressed in a suit, tie, deacon pin, crucifix, walk into the elevator, and there's the little white lady in there. And so I was I nodded my head and acknowledged her, said hello, and her eyes got really big. She backed up to the back of the elevator and grabbed her purse and pulled it closer
oh,
to
I'm
her.
Oh, I'm sorry. But
And I just said, oh, boy, here we go. She's scared.
Yeah.
So I didn't say anything. I just turned around, pushed my floor. The doors closed right in front of my face. I just stood there, didn't turn around, didn't say nothing, and walked out of the elevator when I got to my floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, now, yes, something could have happened to her in the past. I get that.
Sure, sure.
But I didn't do it.
Right.
But why was she reacting that way to me? You know, and that if that happens to you enough times, oh, that hurts.
Yes.
You know, that hurts. Because people aren't seeing me.
That's
They're
right.
not seeing me. They're seeing a stereotype of me. And that hurts. I want people to see me.
Amen.
I want to see people to see Deacon Harold. I don't want them to see whatever they think they see because they watch something on television.
Oh, you're so right. We'll talk again, Deacon. Thank you. Always good talking.
Always great to be with you, Al. Thank you so much for having me on.
Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers will have, of course, contact information available. A great speaker. And in fact, he addressed our Good News Marriage cruise last year. January. This year, I guess. I continue my thanks.